it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
13-9, Super Bowl 40. Some notable games in Pittsburgh football lore, and ones that get rekindled this weekend. One right here in Pittsburgh, and the other just down the road in Morgantown. And I want to open it up to a vibe check from you this morning on either game. Steelers and Seahawks on Sunday, Pitt, West Virginia tomorrow. You can chime in on both games if you want. You know the number, 412-928-9370, to join the conversation. It's Donnie Football with you on 93.7 The Fan from now until 2 p.m. Austin Bechtold, the one we call City Limits, is behind the glass. Our thoughts continue to be with Joe. He made the trip back up to Buffalo last night to be with his family this weekend. They have a matter going on. So you were stuck with Austin and me for the next 4 hours, but we have some friends stopping by. Your calls, obviously, at 412-928-9370. Nick Farrell, executive producer of Blue and Gold Nation, he checks in at 10:30. Nathan Breisinger gives us a Pitt viewpoint at 11:30. He covers the Panthers for Pittsburgh Sports Now, so we have the backyard brawl covered from both sides. And then our usual Friday suspects will join. Ray Fittipaldo at 11, Nick Costos at noon, Bob Walk at 1. We have ourselves a Bechtold breakdown at 12:30 and picks at 1:30. Your calls at 412-928-9370 to hop on the Fan Hotline, which is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. So that's a little rundown. That's off the top, brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding. So you know what's coming on today's show. It's a Football Friday, and it is a loaded Football Friday. Two big games in the area this weekend. We have a Steelers home opener upon us Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m., Acrisure Stadium. We have Fan Game Day live at 9 a.m. from Rivers Casino with myself, Mark Cabali, Jason Mackey. And the weather is supposed to be perfect on Sunday. So if you are going down to tailgate the game, go into the game, or maybe go to one of the nearby watering holes, it should be a great day for that. The Backyard Brawl, we are under 30 hours away from the 108th edition of that game, this time in Morgantown. We have it for you tomorrow, right here, 3:30 kickoff, pregame coverage beginning at 12:30 on The Fan. I'm going to give my thoughts on both games, how I feel going into them. If you want to share what's on your mind, you know the number to join in on the fun. We will start with Steelers and Seahawks on Sunday. And I'm feeling pretty confident going into this game. I don't see a blowout. The Steelers sit right now as about a field goal favorite. Aaron Rodgers has a chance for some history in this game as well. With one touchdown pass, he will tie Brett Favre for fourth all time. With two, he will pass him. And he sits at 507 right now. I think Rodgers gets there, and I don't think he makes himself sweat much on it. I think he does it in the first half. I think by the time that game is going into the locker room, Aaron Rodgers is the fourth all-time touchdown pass leader in the NFL. He can also move into the top six among all-time passing yards with about 250 on the day. He is currently within striking distance of Phillip Rivers. So a few historical footnotes for Rodgers going into the weekend. We also have ourselves a DK Metcalf revenge game brewing. He started his Steelers career with four grabs over 80 yards against the Jets. I think this week is the first touchdown. I am buying in. I am drinking the Kool-Aid this week for DK Metcalf. It seems too obvious to say he will score a touchdown, and it makes me feel like it won't happen, but I am going to say it does anyway. The offense has me feeling good. Probably naive of me, but it's hard to be upset after you see the offense put up 34 points in week one. We have been so hungry and so deprived of good quarterback play, and we have seen that so infrequently over the last 5 years. Last Sunday was a lot of fun. It was fun for the offense, not for the defense. It was the opposite for those guys. I'm not predicting a complete turnaround in this game and a shutout performance or anything like that, but it does have to be better, and it's really not an option. Terrell Austin said yesterday, oh, you'll occasionally have a stinker like that. Well, Terrell, your defenses and Mike Tomlin's defenses seem to have those more often than you would like, a lot more often. In fact, you go back about a half season, the last 8 or 9 games this defense has played, they are giving up about 27 points per game. That's unacceptable. But they face Sam Darnold and the Seahawks on Sunday, and I don't respect Sam Darnold too much as a quarterback. I will let Austin give his thoughts in a few minutes. I know that he is higher on Sam Darnold than I am. I thought last season was a product of him playing for a great offense and a great offensive mind like Kevin O'Connell, and less about his actual ability. I'm not saying he can't beat you, but he has proven he's done that before. But I think he's a pretty average player, and he's mostly one-dimensional. The game the Seahawks played last week was like a Mike Tomlin dream scenario, a defensive slog against the 49ers. Darnold had 150, no touchdowns, no picks, and was 16 for 23 in the game. They also didn't run the football well. Zach Charbonnet had 12 for 47 and a touchdown. Kenneth Walker, 10 attempts for 20 yards. So the Steelers and Seahawks had something in common in week one. Those numbers very similar to what Jalen Warren and Kenneth Gainwell were able to do. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is the big playmaker in that offense right now. Neither running back scares me a ton. The quarterback doesn't scare me a ton. Cooper Kupp, if this was like 2020, he would scare me a lot, but it's 2025. He looked old last week in that game against the 49ers. Then again, I, like a lot of us, pushed down on the Jets offense all week last week, and they led the game in every statistical category except for the score, and outside of a fumbled kickoff, probably would have won that game outright. I don't think the Seahawks will be all that good this season. I think they are a last-place finisher in the NFC West. Of course, the 49ers seemingly have a new injury every single day, so maybe that helps out Seattle. But I don't think they are facing all that great of a football team on Sunday. They need to take care of business here. The Steelers do have something else pretty big going for them, and that is something they didn't have going for them in years past. If they get in a situation where the offense has to put up points, if they get in a shootout-like game, I actually have confidence the offense can keep up. But I don't expect a high-scoring game like we saw last week. The Seahawks have a good secondary, but pay attention to the injury updates. Multiple guys there dinged up, and I mean key players. Devin Witherspoon, Julian Love. They also drafted the big safety, Nick Emenwori, who has not practiced all week. Too many things here seem slanted in the Steelers' direction. So I like them in this game. Something like, I don't know, 24-14 in that ballpark. We will get to our picks later. I will let Austin give his thoughts in a few minutes, but I want to take some calls here at 412-928-9370. Your thoughts going into Steelers and Seahawks. We will start with Tim in the North Hills. What's going on, Tim?
Thank you for taking my call, and I agree with most of what you're saying here. Again, I'm one of the early true believers in Aaron Rodgers once I heard he might be becoming a Steeler. And I just think he's still underrated how great his career has been and how that can translate in not just this year, but probably at least another year coming. And I do believe that, you know, he has transcended, made the Steelers a true contender. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot more games like we did like last week. In other words, somewhat of shootouts where our offense dominates and where, in essence, the quarterback wins the game for the first, you know, for the first time that we've seen in ages. So, again, I just want to put it out there that I think the Steelers were tremendous long shots going into the season for not just winning a playoff game, but going any further. I definitely think there's a true possibility we could advance pretty far in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't mind games where the quarterback has to win them, Tim. I mean, we saw that how many times over the near two-decade career of Big Ben where he just kind of had to put the team on his back and win some games. I don't mind that happening. I don't want to see it have to be necessary all that often because that means that Mike Tomlin's billion-dollar defense is not doing its job. That tells me that a defense that has a price tag of $158 million next to it isn't stopping anybody. And that's unacceptable. The last few years, it's been more acceptable when you see what the offense has and what they're working with to see those ugly games where the offense can only put up 14 or 16 points and the defense has to save them. Because of how much more is on that side of the football. And don't get me wrong, there's going to be games where that really doesn't matter. Lamar Jackson has seemingly figured out what the Steelers' defense presents him now. Just reference the last two games that the teams played against each other. And also, a game against Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or even Joe Burrow, yeah, the defense will take its lumps, and that's okay. If that is a game where Aaron Rodgers has to win it for you, that's perfectly fine with me. 412-928-9370. Scott is in Moon. What's up, Scott?
Hey, Donnie. I'm actually out driving. I'm on the south side, but no problem. Couple things. Number one, I lived out in Seattle in 2005 when the Steelers played the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. And I was with my ex-wife, my now ex-wife's family, and honest to God, I felt like I was on Exile Island. I mean, I was the lone Steeler fan in the whole house. And let me tell you, it was brutal. I think I like the creativity the Steelers are doing on their offense. Bottom line, they need to button up their defense because, as you said, it is unacceptable. And I just want to get your thoughts. I'll take your comments off the phone. But real quick, do you? I kind of get the feeling in my gut and in the back of my head that this is a trap game. Like, I have a feeling that something weird's going to happen and we're going to get caught off guard and, you know, I mean, I'm hoping that's not the case, but it just seems to line up, especially with all the injuries Seattle has and everything. It lines up like a trap game. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on, but
yeah, Scott. I mean, I appreciate the call. The Steelers could absolutely lose. Don't get me wrong. There, I just feel pretty good about them in this game. The vibes do feel pretty high after what we saw the offense do, and you have to think. The defense, you know, it's the home opener. There's going to be some more energy in that building. Those guys should be a little bit more juiced up just automatically by default that they will get the job done.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
But they also haven't fared all that well in home openers. It's kind of been checkered the last few years. You know, they win a game against the Chargers last year. That was a fun one. But think about the opener in 23 against the 49ers. That game was over with about 10 minutes to go in the third quarter. Realistically, it was over before that. But the nail in the coffin was a long touchdown run from Christian McCaffrey. They've had openers against the Raiders in recent years where Derek Carr lights them up. So, yeah, the energy you would think should get the whole team going, should get the defense especially going after a rough start against the Jets in week one. But the possibility is always there that the Steelers could lose a game. I mean, We've all been fans of this team and have followed this team for way too long to really ever think they're going to just roll in and waltz all over a team. So if we are walking away from that game on Sunday around 4:15, and we had just witnessed a Seahawks 24-21 win, that will be far from the most shocking thing I've ever seen. Austin, some of your quick thoughts on the Steelers and Seahawks matchup on Sunday.
Yeah, the biggest thing for me, Donnie, is how does this defense respond? What do they do after getting shelled for another game in a row? Because I'm continuing off of what last season was and how it ended, because the defense picked up right where it left off. So for me, it's going to be what happens when you get back into your own home stadium. You face a Seattle offense that has some new pieces, and just like you, a new quarterback. It didn't seem to affect the Steelers' offense, humming on all cylinders. But Seattle, it seemed like it's taking a little bit of time to be able to get into a flow and get into a rhythm. So I want to see, what does T.J. Watt do? What does Cam Hayward do? And how do they take back the absence of Deshaun Elliott with Peppers, Chuck Clark? What does that look like? My eyes are singularly focused on the defense. I know a lot of eyes are on Aaron Rodgers and what he's going to look like. Obviously, first game at home for Rodgers. But for me, how does this defense bounce back from an atrocious performance?
412-928-9370. That's the number to join the conversation. You can also text us at that number, which is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. The other big game this weekend is tomorrow afternoon in Morgantown, West by God, Virginia. Pitt, WVU, the backyard brawl. Pitt is a touchdown favorite right now. It is Pitt -7 at last check. I told Doran and Adam this earlier, though. I have a weird feeling about this game. You know, we just had a call saying, I got a weird feeling that Seattle will come in here and beat the Steelers on Sunday. Yeah, it could absolutely happen. I think that it's totally possible that Pitt is on upset alert tomorrow. I don't think they will lose the game, but weird things happen when these teams meet up. And the spread doesn't always matter. It really is a throw the record books out the window type affair. I mean, the whole rivalry for a generation of fans has been fueled by Pitt winning a game in which they were 4 touchdown underdogs. So I'm sorry if I'm not completely sold on a dominant Pitt win tomorrow afternoon. I would love to see it. Would absolutely love to see it. And that should happen. But it doesn't mean it always will. West Virginia is coming off an embarrassing loss. They lost to Ohio last week. Not Ohio State, Ohio. The Bobcats. Respect the Mac. They have multiple injuries in their backfield. Jaheim White, probably their best player on offense, certainly their best running back. I also don't know if Nico Markiel is somebody that throws fear into an opposing defense or a defense of Pitt's caliber. A touchdown and a pick this season through two games, just over 400 yards. I know that Pitt hasn't played the stiffest of competition, but Eli Holstein has 8 touchdowns already. They definitely, Pitt, that is, has the upper hand at QB with Eli Holstein. And they absolutely have the playmakers' advantage over WVU. With multiple guys in that offense around or behind Holstein. Scott McKillop, the Pitt Panthers legend, who had a monster performance in that 13-9 game, he joined the morning show about an hour ago, and I thought he made a great point with those guys. He said, West Virginia is the team with nothing to lose here. Pitt has something to lose. They have a lot to lose in this game, given how the season has started. And remember how last season went once Pitt lost a game, everything pretty much unraveled. West Virginia has a whole lot to gain. You think anybody in that fan base will care about the Ohio loss if they beat Pitt tomorrow? And let's think about the guy coaching WVU, Rich Rodriguez. His legacy at West Virginia isn't about all of the games that he won with Pat White and Steve Slayton. It's about the one he lost to Pitt when he had a chance to take the Mountaineers to a national championship game. So I would think tomorrow means a whole lot for him. He can say it doesn't. People, athletes say that all the time. Even though it's not knocking Pitt from an appearance in the title game, it's a big opportunity for WVU to go out on a high note in this series for now. So I think Pitt wins the game, but I think it's a dogfight. I'm not sure of an exact score right now. And even though right there that kind of gave up my pick for later in the show, I think it's a much more difficult game than what some Pitt fans may think it is. Austin, some of your backyard brawl thoughts.
Yeah, Donnie, I think being at West Virginia, this game is going to be a lot closer than people think. Like, the line continues to creep up at 7.5. WVU was embarrassed against Ohio. Like, if you're West Virginia and you get Rich Rod back and there's excitement and, yes, you have all these new players, you cannot lose at Ohio. So if they lose this game to Pitt, West Virginia's season is going to completely spiral when the rubber meets the road and they have to face the heart of Big 12 competition. So I think ultimately WVU does lose, but they do keep it close. It's more of a field goal type of game.
It is Hunger Action Month. WVU and Pitt coming together to support our communities this Hunger Action Month. For every $1 raised, the food bank can provide up to 3 meals. Get involved and donate now at pittsburghfoodbank.org/Pitt. The backyard brawl is tomorrow in Morgantown. Pitt and West Virginia, last one in this series for a minute. And the Mountaineers trying to play a little bit of spoiler, a position that they're not super used to. Usually it is Pitt doing the honors there. And we will have viewpoints from both sides, starting with WVU. Because right now on the fan hotline is Nick Farrell, the executive producer of Blue and Gold Nation down in Morgantown, a former 93.7 The Fan producer, and as always, a proud Waynesburg guy. All three of us here, Nick.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Waynesburg guys, and I would have to say that you are very much on the Mount Rushmore of the Waynesburg Department Communication, pal.
Well, Donnie, that's an honor. Thanks for having me on, brother. And I have to say, back in the day, 2014-ish, more than 10 years ago, Sergio Garcia was my nickname from Chris Muller and Jeff Hathorn. But I have to say that it did not become my personal brand in quite the way that Donnie Football did. So I'm not sure that I can take as much credit as you've just given me there, but I appreciate it.
Well, Nick, you have a whole mantle of trophies from your broadcasting work in West Virginia. And as somebody who is a bit of an expert on the Mountaineers, we got to start with that Ohio game, man. I mean, what happened there? Everything that went poorly for West Virginia, and how did the Bobcats knock them off?
So look, I want to start by saying I think Ohio is a good group of six football team. Like I think that was very apparent watching that game. West Virginia, though, played poorly offensively, and that's a fact. Like, I think that when you look back at the game and you zoom out a little bit, the defense played one bad quarter. And one thing that Coach Rodriguez, since he got back on campus and started working with his football team, has said over and over again, one thing that his team is not going to do is beat itself. And the way that you beat yourself is by turning the football over and committing bad penalties. And West Virginia committed bad penalties that allowed Ohio to score 17 points in the first half and then win the game. In fact, all three of Ohio's scoring drives were extended by bad West Virginia defensive penalties. But other than that quarter, I think the defense played winning football, Donnie, had three consecutive Ohio offensive possessions end with interceptions, and then the offense just couldn't cash in. A big reason for that is Shaheen White's injury late in the first half. He, of course, is out for the season, and that's really, really detrimental for this WVU offense. I mean, White was preseason All-Big 12. He was supposed to be the star, and immediately you see how West Virginia's offense dipped off after he was out for the rest of the game. I think in the second half, the stat was 10 rushes for only 14 yards for WVU. That's not winning football. West Virginia is going to have to find an answer for that. It's not just the reserve running backs. The offensive line definitely struggled in the game too. And that was at the root of all of West Virginia's offensive inefficiency in the second half. And so when you combine that with the miscues on defense, the three penalties that extended those three scoring drives, that was really the recipe for doom against Ohio.
Yeah, Jaheim White on the season had three touchdowns in just the two games. He had 148 yards from scrimmage, Nick. So what does the backfield look like behind him due to his season-long injury? Who are the names, who are the guys that people will see on that field tomorrow?
It's a good question. The guy that West Virginia went to in White's absence in the second half against Ohio was Clay Ash. He's a unique story. He was a walk-on at WVU. He was honored as the Nikolich Award winner in the spring, which is given to the program's top walk-on. And it would be a great story, right, if he comes in and has a really great game in the backyard brawl or helps West Virginia at any point this season. Because, look, with all the changes in college football, walk-ons are a dying breed. They might become a thing of the past, and this might be one of the last opportunities for a walk-on to really make an impact in the backyard brawl. Who knows if that's really going to be the case. Another guy that you could see is Sincere Bowers. The talk around the facility this week is that Bowers is a really high potential guy. He's got great speed and is one of the fastest players on the roster. Maybe he gets sprinkled in a little bit. He did have a touchdown against Robert Morris for whatever that's worth in the second half of that game, which West Virginia won by 42 points. And then another guy that's kind of just an unknown at this point is Ty Edwards. Could you see him? Maybe. Don't know. He could also work his way in at some point in this game. And then what you saw in the Ohio game is that Nico Markiel, the starting quarterback for West Virginia, came out. Jalen Henderson quarterbacked the Mountaineers for two drives. Henderson, the transfer, is definitely a running threat. He's not, you know, Markiel is more of a complete quarterback who can pass the ball. Henderson is really a running quarterback. It's possible that you could see West Virginia mix in multiple quarterbacks because they want to try to keep Pitt on its toes defensively. And if you mix in Henderson, maybe you have some run threats. You put Nico back in, it opens up the playbook a little bit. You could see that happen to try to get a spark with the rushing offense.
Now, is Henderson somebody who could pass the football deep down the field if the opportunity was there? Or when numbers set, when he's in the game, when Henderson's in the game, is it almost surely a run?
I haven't seen it yet, Donnie. I think he was 0 for 2 in the Robert Morris game with passing attempts. I don't know if that stat is 100% accurate, but really the only guy that we've seen throw the ball down the field in West Virginia's two games this season is Nico.
Nick, curious about Rodney Gallagher, the former Laurel Highlands product. How much of an impact do you think he can make in this game?
Yeah, interesting question, too, because he is a guy who's really dynamic. They've not found a way to get him the ball a ton yet. I think he had a couple of touches against Ohio. The thing that makes him unique, too, is his speed and shiftiness. It's possible that they could find ways to get him involved in some screen passes or things like that. Of course, Gallagher played defense last year. He's really versatile and fit in a role for WVU last year because West Virginia's secondary just was not very good, and Gallagher played a little bit of nickel. I think, though, with not just Whiteout, but Jaden Bray, who is a wide receiver for West Virginia, he's out for the season. So West Virginia also has to find solutions at wide receiver. The guy that they've gone to is Cam Vaughn. He was a preseason Biletnikoff watchlist player. He's going to be the primary threat. Preston Fox, a veteran and Morgantown native, is going to get more touches in the offense as well. And then after that, who's it going to be? I think you could see Gallagher slide in a little bit in the slot. And, of course, what a story it would be for a Western PA guy to make an impact on the backyard brawl. We'll see about Gallagher. I mean, he definitely is dynamic, but so far haven't seen too much from him yet.
Talking to Nick Farrell, executive producer of Blue and Gold Nation, down in Morgantown, getting a Mountaineers viewpoint ahead of the backyard brawl tomorrow afternoon, 3:30 kick. We will have it for you right here on 93.7 The Fan. Nick, I feel as if a lot of Rich Rodriguez's legacy falls into the backyard brawl. And you know the game I'm going to bring up. It's not that he's remembered for all of the wins that he had with that great offense in the 2000s. I get the feeling that a lot on his shoulders has to do with that 13-9 game and him losing an opportunity to coach in a national championship game. I don't care what coaches and athletes say sometimes. This has to mean a little bit more for him tomorrow afternoon.
I mean, you're right, Donnie. I mean, the backyard brawl always means more, right? And with the opportunity for bragging rights that could extend into 2029 since this game's going to go dormant for 3 years, it means more to a lot of people, not just Coach Rodriguez. I'm sure you guys have discussed this week. You know, Coach Rodriguez was asked about that this week. What does he think about 2007 when he reflects on that game? And he said, yes, it was the worst night of his professional career. But at the same time, he's moved past that. If this game was being played, if this sort of quote-unquote reunion game was being played a couple of years after 2007, it might feel a little bit differently. But 18 years later, he did kind of downplay a little bit that sensation of wanting to get redemption against Pitt. I do think, Donnie, that there is definitely some legitimacy to your comment, but I think Coach Rodriguez's number one priority is figuring out the stuff that ails West Virginia offensively right now, because he's got some big question marks to figure out with White and Bray out for the season for WVU, and maybe a couple guys out on defense too against Pitt, a Pitt offense that is really, really cooking right now with Holstein and Reed back. They've got a lot of continuity, and that's the thing West Virginia doesn't have. You know, one thing that's unique about Coach Rodriguez's recent history is that when he was at Jacksonville State, his squad last year had a really slow start, but then played really well and ended up winning a conference championship later in the season. You wonder if maybe this is the game where everything clicks. I think that's a big ask for West Virginia because of the platform upon which the backyard brawl is played. But if this team clicks this week, that could be a huge, huge turning point for Coach Rodriguez in his first season back with WVU.
Nick, you mentioned a few injuries on that West Virginia defense. Who are some guys that should play in this game and could make impactful plays?
A primary guy that's a question is Reed Carrico, linebacker from Ohio, transferred from Ohio State, second-year Mountaineer. He was listed as day-to-day this week by Coach Rodriguez. I think that Carrico, Ben Cutter, Chase Wilson, those guys in the linebacking core played pretty solid football. against Ohio. In fact, two of those guys, Carrico left the game early with an injury, but the other two had interceptions. Then you've got Fred Perry, who is a nickel who transferred in from Jacksonville State, one of several guys who transferred from Jack State with Coach Rodriguez. Perry is all over the field. Like, he is a guy who can blow up plays all the time and really has stood out through the first two games. And I think that with new defensive coordinator Zach Alley, I don't think we've seen everything that this West Virginia defense has up its sleeves yet. And I expect that West Virginia will look more multiple defensively this week and try to throw more things at Holstein to make him uncomfortable. Also, West Virginia has some pretty good players on the defensive line. Edward Besterinen, a guy who is from Finland, who plays for WVU up front. He's coming off an injury last year. He's been decent the first couple of weeks. A guy that stood out against Robert Morris was Hammond Russell, the nose guard. He's an interior lineman who's really big, is a solid player, and has developed at WVU under the former head coach, Neil Brown, and is finally coming into his own this season. They really like him. So between Besterinen and Russell, those are maybe the two primary guys that you think could put pressure on Holstein and be important in that run stop against Reed.
Do you expect the usual atmosphere tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Donnie, it's going to be insane. I mean, I thought that every brawl of the last 3 years has been really, really fun. 2 years ago at Milan Puskar Stadium, it was just such an impressive night. Strike the stadium, twilight hour on national TV, and of course West Virginia played really exceptional defense. I think there are two things that were themes in that game that need to occur again tomorrow. The first is the crowd has to be bumping to just try to impact the game in some way. And I know that that's going to happen, right? That one is absolutely going to happen because everybody's so fired up about Coach Rodriguez being back, and the excitement around West Virginia's football program is higher, really, than it's ever been in the Big 12 era. But the other thing for WVU is the defense has to capitalize. And I think that was the recipe for success 2 years ago against Pitt at home when West Virginia won 17-6. West Virginia's offense didn't really play well in that game. Derek Green was knocked out with an injury. Nico Arkiel came in and did well enough to win the game. West Virginia's offense, again, with some injuries, still figuring a lot of stuff out about itself. The defense is going to have to play really, really well, force some turnovers, maybe even score a defensive touchdown for West Virginia to have a chance to win this game. I think the Mountaineers keep it close for sure, and a big reason for that would be a strong defensive performance.
One more for you, Nick. The game prediction around 7 p.m. tomorrow night. We know those college games go a little bit longer than the pro games. 7 p.m. tomorrow, the dust is settled. What's the final score, and who is the MVP?
Oh, great question. So again, I think that it's close. I think West Virginia keeps it close. I think the way for West Virginia to win the game is, again, with strong defense. So let's say this. I think it's low scoring. If West Virginia were to win, it would be 17-14 would be my prediction, with a Fred Perry interception or maybe strip sack that defines the game. That would be my take.
Nick Farrell, executive producer, Blue and Gold Nation, giving us a West Virginia viewpoint ahead of the Backyard Brawl tomorrow. Nick, thanks so much for hopping on and taking the time, man.
You bet. Go Jackets.
There we go. That's a vintage line there, Austin, a vintage one. Nick and I crossed over just 1 year at Waynesburg. He was a senior as I was coming in as a freshman, and he was the leader of that department.
He awesome. Called the last win against WNJ for
that
Waynesburg football.
That he did.
Very and iconic for that.
What will possibly be the last win they ever have against WNJ, the way things are looking.
Yeah, I would not be running to place a bet on that to change anytime soon.
50-minute mark on the Fan. That is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. Austin, I liked your question about Rodney Gallagher. I was going to go there at one point, so good job by you to get that one in. He hasn't really made that much of an impact at West Virginia so far over the course of his college career. Maybe the way that a lot of people around here, just knowing that name, would have anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, when he was being recruited by Pitt, West Virginia, Penn State, like, that was a big deal in the area. Like, around Whipple circuits, this was, okay, where is Rodney Gallagher ultimately going to go? When he committed to West Virginia, people kind of expected, maybe not year one, but year two, him to step in and be a huge contributor for them offensively. not as the next Tavon Austin, but as a gadget guy that can do similar things and can move around the field. You can get him in motion and be a good slot receiver. It just does not come to fruition.
Yeah, last season, 26 receptions, 288 yards. He did have three touchdowns. He gets a handful of carries every year. He already has three this season. He had 15 and 16 the 2 years prior. But, yeah, he has not been the player that maybe we anticipated, just knowing and hearing that name so often. It really does feel like the scales are in Pitt's favor heavily in this game. But you and I have both talked a little bit, and Nick with some very good insight there from the West Virginia side of things. That doesn't always matter. Like every single statistical category could be in Pitt's favor going into this game, and I don't know if I will feel comfortable with them just going in there and rolling West Virginia. Like, I would be a bit surprised if tomorrow night it hits 7 o'clock and Pitt wins the game something like 34-0.
Yeah, I would too. And I covered the last game that was at West Virginia in this matchup, and that was the Phil Jurkovec really poor performance game where Beanie Bishop said we knew that he wasn't very good at his job, and it was a defensive slugfest. And WVU needs a similar type of game where they keep it low scoring, they play good defense, and they don't allow Des Reed out in space.
That had to be one of the ugliest football games I've ever watched.
Yes.
I'm going to pull up the
it was the
box
environment
score for that now.
The environment was really fun to be a part of and be in.
Oh, I don't doubt that whatsoever, but my goodness, like, I'm going to pull up this box score and probably just laugh at what the numbers look like. That was the 17-6 loss,
yes,
that Pitt suffered in Morgantown a couple of years ago. Jurkovec was just horrible.
It was so bad. He threw 8 of 20 terrible picks.
8 of 20, 81 yards, no touchdowns, 3 picks.
I mean, and the picks were so bad, Donnie. They were really bad overthrows. He stared down one receiver and threw a pick. Like, man, you complete 8 passes, 11 total on the day, and 3 of them are the other team.
Yeah, that's one of the worst quarterback stat lines I've looked at in quite some time. And Nico Markiel, the starter for West Virginia, he played majority of that game. Garrett Green went out with an injury. Markiel, not that he did a whole lot either. West Virginia did a lot of its work on the ground. Markiel, 6 of 9, 60 yards, a touchdown and no picks. C.J. Donaldson had the big game.
Yeah.
For West Virginia.
You know where C.J. Donaldson's at now, Donnie?
With the Buckeyes.
Ohio State.
18 carries, 102, and a touchdown in that game. I just think back, though, I was watching that game at a friend's house. The weather was nice, and it was a primetime game. They had, you know, an outdoor TV set up, a little fire going. Very nice little homey-type atmosphere to watch the game. But my goodness, was it ugly.
I called a W&J game at 1 o'clock and went right from Washington down to Morgantown and got down there in time to cover the game.
And
pretty fun day.
That W&J game was probably much prettier of a watch than what Pitt and West Virginia did. Maybe not as fun.
It was a blowout, but a lot of points were scored.
Yeah, maybe not as fun because of the atmosphere. I do think that's the big thing. Pitt has to overcome that tomorrow night. We've seen them do that in the past. They simply can't let the crowd make too much of a factor, or else West Virginia really could pull this thing off. Listen to Pomp and Joe every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contest run every Wednesday through Friday at 12 noon at the 937thefan.com contesting page. A few minutes away, Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette, he will join us. The weather, just outstanding this weekend. It should be a very nice day tomorrow. It will be a beautiful day on Sunday if you are going to the home opener against the Seahawks. I will be down there at the Rivers Casino starting at 9 a.m. I will get to enjoy some time tailgating before going into that game. Austin, I know that you will be down there.
Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
Tailgating with some of your people. It's normally one of the bigger tailgating days of the year on the Steelers schedule. People will get all hyped up for that first game. They'll sort of mellow out throughout the middle of the season. You find a game here and there where it perks up a little bit, but the home opener, always a very fun one. The weather should be outstanding that day, and
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.